Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Your Euro 2020 and Copa America finals preview here on the Soccer Gambling Podcast is presented by WinBet. Get started today and you'll get risk-free bets of $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com and download the app today. Also brought to you by PropSwap, America's number one app to buy and sell sports bets. Use the promo code SGP on your first deposit and receive up to $500 in bonus cash. That's PropSwap.com and the promo code SGP. We're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Sign up at UnderdogFantasy.com with the promo code SGPN and receive a free $25 entry to use in Best Ball Mania 2 for a chance to win $1 million. And of course, don't forget to download the SGPN app in the App Store or the Google Play Store today.
Captain Keir has to stick it in his own net, and that's England back in the game.
Going around the ball, and Sterling down in the box. It is a penalty for England. Sterling has done that all night, and in the end, he was just too tricky. Schmeichel saves. Kane is there to follow. Wembley is alive and thundering with noise. But he just kept his cool in the end. It was heart-in-mouth type stuff. It's a brilliant save from Kasper Schmeichel. But he must not have believed his luck.
It's one of the worst penalties Harry Kane has struck in a long, long time.
It was.
Kieran Trippier could not watch. He could not bear to turn and look.
You are listening to your Euro 2020 and Copa America 2020 finals preview here on the Soccer Gambling Podcast. You can follow the Soccer Gambling Podcast on Twitter at SGP Soccer. That's at SGP Soccer. You can follow the Sports Gambling Podcast Network on Twitter at the SGP Network. That's at the SGP Network. Also check out my website, lockbetting.com. We've landed nearly 6 units in futures. If we land more than that, that will be dependent upon England lifting the trophy and Brazil lifting the trophy in both the Euro 2020 and Copa America finals. We've also made a solid start to the NBA playoffs, going 3-1 with our top play so far. We've been heavy on the Suns to cover the first 2 spreads, and they have done to get all of the rest of my plays for the rest of the month, including this weekend's UFC card. Head over to lockbetting.com as we go for our 98th month in a row of transparent track profit. That's right, for over 8 years, I haven't had a losing month, despite morons on gambling Twitter thinking that this is not possible. One particular account targets me very often, telling me, oh, you must be the best gambler in the world. It's a Dead President's Picks, that's what he's called. It's an account that basically touts all of these other gambling Twitter accounts and says, follow my guy, follow my guy, follow my guy, follow my guy. His guys are all serial losers. The soccer accounts are an absolute joke. They are losing around 30, 40 units a week. I'm talking about top tier picks. I'm talking about Fredo. I'm talking about Dean of the EU. I have bought all of their packages secretly, have tracked all of them, and every single one of these guys are absolute losers. They do not have a clue about soccer. They are blindly tailing overs. This guy vouches for all of them. He is also a losing kappa as well. Most people on gambling Twitter are. If you don't have a P&L, if you don't have transparency, if you are taking money through cash apps and PayPals, you are not a real kappa. You are a fraud. You are also a fraud if you are going on there and you are giving out 5 to 10 unit plays to your clients, expecting them to spend that much of their bankroll on your picks, but you are on there asking people, begging people if they have any free streams for UFC cards or boxing matches. That is what makes you a fraud. It is a standout trait. It is black and white. It is clear to see. Do not tell these people. Do not give them any money. If you want to make some real money, follow me and my record here. I don't charge $5 a month. I don't charge $10 a month. I don't charge even $40 a month. I charge what is representative of the amount of money that I've made people over the course of 98 months. If you don't want to pay it, you don't want to pay it. Continue to make your own picks and good luck with that. Continue to tail these losers on Twitter and good luck with that. But if you want to make some serious money with me, who has 97 months in a row of transparent track profit, and I'm well on my way to the 98th month, then head over to lockbetting.com. That is the sales pitch. Let's move on with the show. And I've got to warn you off the top of the show, I am not going to remain unbiased here on this show. I am desperate for England to win Euro 2020. I even have some guests coming in on the show at the request of the SGP, wanted me to bring on some England fans that I knew to talk about Sunday's final here with Italy, England versus Italy at Wembley Stadium. On Sunday, unfortunately, tout tickets for this game range at around about £20,000 per ticket. I actually inquired with a tout that I usually get cup final tickets from and actually made an offer which is above and beyond what I paid for any Manchester United cup final and said, hey, I'm willing to pay £3,000 here for a pair of tickets for this game for me and my son. If you can sort me anything out, get back to me. Obviously, if it had come in and said, oh, you know, £3,500, $4,000 is what they're going for, I would have probably found that extra bit of money. He laughed at me. He literally laughed at me and said, are you joking? Because these tickets are going for £20,000 each. So my offer of £3,000 for a pair was £37,000 short of what I needed to have in order to get one of these tout tickets for this final. That's how desperate people are to go, considering it's been 55 years since England have been to a major final. But we will not be covering that first. We'll be covering that second, because there is a game happening before that on Saturday night, as Brazil and Argentina have made their way to the Copa America final.
Yeah.
Yes, here we go. We have got our dream final that we wanted, despite there being no fans, no atmosphere, and a Copa America tournament that nobody wanted off the bat. We have got here with Brazil and Argentina winning the groups and navigating their way here to a Copa America final in Brazil, where Lionel Messi looks to win his first trophy as an Argentina player, but he needs to do it on Brazilian soil. He has been phenomenal throughout this tournament, undoubtedly. There's a lot of debate about who's the best player at Euro 2020. A lot of people saying Raheem Sterling, which is just ridiculous to me. And I'll be talking about that with my guests when they come on later. But Lionel Messi has been the clear front runner here with assists and goals, carrying his team on his back. A Maradona-esque performance from 1986, where his assists and goals carried Argentina to a World Cup. But that is a World Cup. This is a Copa America. This tournament happens too often. This is happening without fans. This is happening without all of the countries from Europe there. So even if he gets this done, I think it will be great for Messi. I think it will be great for Argentina. I think it will be great for his legacy. It's not comparable to the 1986 World Cup. If he wants to be in that conversation for me with Diego Maradona, I think he needs to win the World Cup next year, and I don't think that's going to happen with this Argentina team. But this Argentina team has improved massively. At the back, they now have a goalkeeper that they can rely on when you're looking at Martinez of Aston Villa. This goalkeeper has improved tenfold over the last 2-3 years since being the number one at Arsenal. Unbelievably, they didn't sign him and keep him on. They allowed him to go to Aston Villa, but he continues to be solid for Aston Villa. He was one of their best players this season, and he has brought that over to the Copa America, where he won this game for them via the penalty shootout by talking to the Colombian players. I urge you guys to seek out a YouTube video of this, where Martinez was talking to the Colombian players and trash talking them as they were stepping up to take their penalty kicks, completely psyched them out. It takes a lot of balls to do this. It takes a lot of intelligence to do this. This is something which is the mindset, which I think is the mindset of a winner, where you don't care how this is going to come across. You don't care whatever it takes. You don't care about how this is going to be perceived. You want to win that game. And that's what he even said afterwards. I want to win this for Messi. Messi is the greatest of all time. I would die for Lionel Messi. This kind of attitude makes you scared going into this as a Brazilian backer for this tournament. And I have to admit, if I was betting on this now and I didn't have this future riding, I would be siding here with Argentina as the 6-4 underdogs here to lift this trophy. Brazil are available at 8-15. Obviously, with us taking a 5-4 price on that at the start of the tournament, we are in a very good position to hedge if I feel strongly about Argentina's chances to lift this trophy. The 90-minute line sees Brazil here at 11-10. It's 21-10 the draw, and it's 14-5 here on Argentina. I think for me, Brazil, it has to be Brazil in 90 minutes, or I start to strongly fancy Argentina. I just feel that they feel like a team of destiny here. And I think they also will be a team that will be reliant on Messi once again. So I can see them setting up in this game with a lot of men behind the ball and not allowing Brazil to break them down and looking to create those opportunities for Martinez or for Messi to hit Brazil on the counter-attack and try and win this game. The thing is that Brazil, they don't keep clean sheets for no reason. I don't think Tete is going to allow his team to be counter-attacked here in this game. So those opportunities are going to be few and far between. And with the final that we have here, despite the fact that so many people wanted it, I wanted it, everybody else wanted it, it is the marquee game here that's going to draw the most people in to watch this game. I do feel it has a sense of two teams that may cancel each other out, with Argentina being cagey and knowing what Brazil are capable of and relying on their front players to win this game for them, namely Lionel Messi, which has been the Argentinian ethos for a while. And sometimes he hasn't had the supporting cast to get that done. What's been fortunate for him here is that the back line have been solid and he has had the supporting cast around him to get that done. They have made contributions, whereas Messi's contribution is far bigger than the rest. The others have accompanied Messi here to carry this team over the line. They've been able to get on the end of those assists, turning those assists, because assists aren't assists unless they turn into goals. They're just chances created that are wasted. They're just expected goals, a very popular metric in the US, but doesn't really carry too much weight with me. But that's what they end up being. But they have put the ball in the back of the net, so the supporting cast have been better. But I don't think Brazil are going to give up those chances. This team showed against Chile what they can do when they were 1-0 up and down to 10 men. They basically parked the bus and made it very, very difficult for Chile to play. This is not synonymous with Brazilian football. This is probably not popular with Brazilian fans, but this manager doesn't give a shit. He has an unbelievable clean sheet record, and he's able to grind out those results. So for me, one of my favourite plays for this game is under 2.5 goals, because I just don't see 3 goals here in what's likely to be a cagey game. But despite that fact, I can see both teams scoring. And if I like the under and I see both teams scoring, that means I'm heavily aligned here with a 1-1 scoreline. So I like that scoreline here at 6-1. The Brazilians are unbeaten on home turf for 7 years and have not lost a home Copa America tie since 1975. Argentina extended their unbeaten run to 19 games through to semi-finals, although a lot of those games have been draws. And Brazil have won in the last 6 direct elimination matches, and Argentina have not beaten their rivals in a competition match since 2005. So for Argentina to win this, a lot is going to have to change. I think that both teams will be able to eke out an opportunity, but ultimately, I do think this one will go to penalty shootouts, but I'm more strongly aligned with the under here. I don't think that we'll see 3 goals. I don't think they're going to, either team are going to give the other the opportunity to score twice here in this game. As soon as the first goal scored in this game, I would see the other team going very, very defensively minded, limiting even their counters and pushing 7 or 8 men behind the ball, not allowing the top players here in either team for them to break down. But I think if Argentina score first, I think Brazil are more likely to penetrate and break through. But if Brazil score first in this game, I think it's going to be very, very difficult for Argentina, who have relied on a counter-attacking style here with Messi leading that charge to break teams down. Obviously, that hasn't been consistent throughout the tournament. There have been some very lopsided games where teams have allowed Argentina to have the ball, and Argentina have managed to break those teams down. They haven't really had too many issues in terms of being a ball-dominant team that haven't been able to convert that into goals. So I think this is a very, very interesting game, even though I don't think it's going to be the entertainment spectacle that everybody's expecting. But Argentina coming to this in good form. Despite the fact they did win a penalty shootout in the last round, that hasn't been consistent throughout the whole tournament. They haven't been scrapping through with 1-0s or getting loads of draws in the group phase or just looking very untidy and generally lucky, whereas Brazil have sailed through with 2-0s and 3-0s and 4-0s. That's usually the look of this competition. And when we get to this final, if you said to me we're going to get to this final, I would say Argentina would have rode their luck, whereas Brazil have looked consistently good. No, that hasn't been the case. In fact, I would go as far out to say that Argentina have looked better getting here and have faced stronger opponents. So this is, for me, is much more of a coin flip than the odds suggest. And Argentina, for me, have more of the feel of destiny. But I'm already riding a Brazil future, so there's nothing I can really do with that now other than take a semi-hedge here on this game. But my favourite play, as I said at the top of this preview, would be to take the under 2.5 goals in this one, because I just don't see a scenario where 3 goals are scored in this game. The books obviously agree with me here, because the under 2.5 goals in this game is currently priced up at 8-13. If you shop around, you can probably get out 4-6 minus 150, but you have to be fast, because I'm only seeing a couple of books that are still leaving that line there available for you to take. So that is your Copa America final preview done there. Let's now move on to the final of Euro 2020. So here we are, it's the Euro 2020 final, Italy versus England at Wembley Stadium, cashing another futures play on England to reach the final here. That was given out for free, actually, over on the sports gambling podcast show that I was doing with Ryan and Sean. That cashed at 10-3, so over 3-1. And my clients are also riding a long-term future on England to win the entire tournament, given out after the Germany game, because I saw a clear route to the final after that game. I told everybody, I said, the winner of England-Germany will make it through to the final. Do not bother putting a bet on either one of these teams to qualify, because the route will be clear, especially if it's England with this potential quarterfinal they have against Ukraine or Sweden, and the semi-final at Wembley. Wembley ended up being the deciding factor. Whether you think the Sterling penalty was a penalty or not, I'm not 100% sure that would have been given without the Wembley crowd calling for it. But I do also think it things evened out with Harry Kane not being given a clear penalty in normal time. Plus, England were dominant in that game. Plus, England have had years and years of horrendous luck and things go against us in major tournaments. So it certainly evened out. I know a lot of people don't like us. I know a lot of people are using that decision as a reason. But I think with the politics and things going into the tournament as well, with the things with the knee and the players speaking out, some countries across Europe, they don't like that. They don't want to see a mix of sports and politics. I actually agree with that. And if I was a neutral, I probably wouldn't be supporting England, but I'm not a neutral. I'm a person who started going to watch England games as early as 1989. I was a person who suffered through the 1990 World Cup. I've suffered through numerous tournaments, through Lineker, Gascoigne and Barnes and Stuart Pearce to Alan Shearer and Gazza again and McManaman and Ince from 96 to the generation of Beckham and Owen when we thought that Michael Owen was going to carry us to success in major tournaments and be the greatest English player of all. Didn't quite work out because of injuries. We then had Scholes, Beckham, Gerrard, Lampard, Alan Shearer, all of these players coming through. Wayne Rooney, Rio and Terry, the best centre-back combination in the world, or the best perceived centre-back combination in the world. They didn't get it done. This team have let me down year in, year out, have suffered, have cried, have broken shit in my house. And we are now here in a final 55 years later. But the suffering isn't over, because this could all turn into more suffering come Sunday night if Italy are the team lifting the trophy. The bookies have them as the even money underdogs, to do that. But very slight underdogs, with England at 4-5 here to win this tie overall. On the money line, England are available at 13-8 with a draw at 2-1, and Italy also at 2-1. Look at some other prices here before I start bringing my guests onto the show. Italy to win in extra time is 11-1. England extra time, 10-1. Either team in extra time is 5-1. Italy on pens, 10-1. England on pens, 10-1. And either team on pens, 5-1. Italy on pens, 10-1. England on pens, 10-1. I really don't agree with that, because I do feel if the game goes to penalties, there's only going to be one winner, and it isn't going to be England. We already saw the nerves of Harry Kane with that penalty kick. It was in the little piece that I added at the top of the show. The commentator even said that was the worst penalty that Kane took. And it shows that the nerves will get to you, because that's a Premier League game on a Saturday, and it's just for 3 points, Tottenham versus Leicester. Harry Kane smashes that penalty past Kasper Schmeichel 10 times out of 10. And in this game, he took a very, very weak penalty. That does not bode well for penalty shootouts if Harry Kane's nerves cannot withstand the size of the task ahead. Sorry, I'm stumbling over my words here as I'm talking about England here, because it's an emotional thing, because we want to win this tournament, because we're all together in this tournament. To explain the difference is hard, but this is very different to your club teams. This is very different to your Manchester United, Arsenal's, Liverpool's, etc. This is very different to your NFL teams. There isn't that unity there with that team coming through. Every year you see the Super Bowl winner described as the world champions. But what other countries are playing? You're not the world champions of a sport that is only primarily played in America. Now, I understand there are European leagues and things of that nature, but look, it's not the same. If you put all of the NFL players, the best NFL players, into a team and played other football teams from across the world, you would crush them. You would be covering 75-point spreads. It would be pointless. It wouldn't be anything for the nation to celebrate if you ended up truly being the world champions of American football. It wouldn't be something to celebrate at all. Same goes for the NBA. If you put those American players together, we've seen them destroy other teams in the Olympics. We all remember the Dream Team. That's not something to celebrate. I don't think you celebrate individuals like golfers winning PGAs or tennis players winning Grand Slams if they are Americans. I don't think America unanimously celebrated the successes of Andy Roddick. It's not the same thing. this is something that I don't think Americans will ever experience. And even if America had an unbelievable soccer team, I don't think suddenly it would rise to be the number one sport in the country. I don't even think it could even reach number two. I don't know where it ranks now. I think it's probably narrowly in the top five, if not outside of the top five. That's not the same. The euphoric feeling of the US national team winning this soccer tournament, winning a World Cup, wouldn't be the same as these other countries where football is unanimously the number one sport in the world for all of these nations playing in it across Europe. And you can add Brazil and Argentina to that conversation. It is the number one sport in the world worldwide. It is not comparable to the NFL or the Super Bowl because the Champions League final, this European final, and the World Cup absolutely trounce the NFL numbers for the Super Bowl every single year. And that includes every other sporting event as well. Wimbledon finals, WWE WrestleMania, you can add any event to it. Nothing is comparable to the World Cup, followed by the Champions League final, followed by this European Cup final that's taken place this weekend. This is without a doubt the number one sport in the world, and it brings people together. So the celebration of the Packers and Manchester United winning, yeah, that's incredible for me. But it's only shared by a few pockets of Packers fans or the Manchester United fans that I've known since I was growing up or that I go to games with or that I talk to on social media. It isn't your next door neighbour. It isn't your brother. My brother doesn't support Manchester United. My dad does, but my brother doesn't. This is shared with your son, your uncles, your next door neighbours, the man that runs the corner shop, every single person. This is unanimous. This is the only thing that brings 60 million people together and everybody is cheering for the same outcome. That's debatable, I think, with this tournament, with things being so politicised. And obviously, we have a lot of people living here that aren't English. But more or less, 99% of the country are behind England here on Sunday. And that just doesn't happen with club football. And going to a bar, knowing that you're watching something which the entire country is invested in. Now, obviously, you can go to a bar. You can go to a bar in Philadelphia, and Philadelphia Eagles could be in the Super Bowl, and it will be a euphoric atmosphere. There will be that desperation. But you know that it doesn't carry over to the entire country. The people in New York and California are not supporting the Philadelphia Eagles. So it's not the entire country whose hopes are pinned on this one particular result. And it's just different. It's just a different euphoria. It's just a different type of desperation. It's just a different type of disappointment. It's a disappointment that I've experienced over and over and over again, because you want to share this moment, because your friends, they don't support the same teams as you. They don't support the same players as you. Your family don't even. Like, the next door neighbours don't. This is a mutual investment from the entire country. It's so difficult to put into words what I'm trying to explain here. You have to be here and you have to feel what it means when England are playing in the major tournaments. And also you have to feel that the hype that we put on our teams, and we've done it over and over again. This team are going to get there. The Beckham and Owen team are going to get there. The Gerrard and Lampard team are going to get there. Wayne Rooney's going to win this World Cup for us or get us further here in this tournament. We are going to make it to the finals. And then we don't. And suddenly we don't. We've been talking about it's coming home since 1996, and it's never come home until this point. And it still hasn't until we win this game on Sunday. So that's just a small, small little slice of what it actually means. And as I said, I've lived through it. I'm more passionate about it. I obviously work in football. I obviously go to football games. I obviously know a lot about it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here on this show. And that's come through suffering through it. I mean, it's very, very weird, but you fall in love with it through the suffering. It was how I felt, and the disappointment I felt as a seven-year-old when England didn't win the 1990 World Cup, that made me desperate to jump on the bandwagon of the team to try and search and feel that alternative feeling of the winning. So I became a Manchester United supporter at this point, and I could feel that winning, and I felt that winning all the way up to 2013. And now I'm going through a miserable period with Manchester United as a Manchester United supporter. I'm going through a miserable period as a Green Bay Packers supporter. But my country, who's let me down ever since 1990, have now reached the finals. So yes, it does mean a lot, and it's very, very difficult to come on and do this show without being completely biased and rooting for England. And I know a lot of people want us to lose, and I know a lot of people will be wanting Italy to win in what is perceived as being unfair, as a lot of people are saying that England were handed this and England were going to get to this final regardless. And this was always fixed for England with so many games being played at Wembley. And listen, I completely and utterly understand that as a neutral. And if I was certainly a Denmark fan looking at this, then I would be taking the same stance. I'm going to play you a little clip that I pulled up from Guillaume Balaguer, who sort of analysed this situation and his hatred towards England. And he's basically taken the stance that I've taken throughout the tournament in terms of we should... Well, he doesn't agree that you shouldn't mix politics and sport. He actually does think that politics has a place in sport. I disagree with him, but he's speaking on behalf of the Spanish people who hate England and tries to give a reason behind why the Spanish people are so anti-England here and against England reaching this final. So have a listen to this.
Can I say, and be prepared for this, I'm surprised by the amount of ill feeling towards England getting into the final that I sense from Spain. I was in one of the biggest radio shows last night, and they left me at the end, so everybody had to say, and it's a very, there was like six or seven people talking about it, all criticizing England for different reasons. The penalty wasn't a penalty, it was a dive, and so much talk about foreigners diving, but look when they do. The style is boring, there was a lot of talk about the style, that, you know, England were lucky. How about the foreign influences? If it wasn't for them, what? This Euros is designed for England to win. And when I came in, I became the biggest defender of England for many reasons, but because I felt that you now created a formula that has to do with tournament football. You play in a way that will help you win. Style is not important in England, not that important right now. And there was no talk about, unlike in Germany, no talk about history. You know, the fact that 55 years trying to look for a final, none of that. So I really need to think about why there is such an ill feeling about it. It hasn't really sunk in, the fact that this squad is full of good people with social conscience who are changing the perception of England, at least in England, about yourselves. And I wonder, deep down, is because most people in Spain feel that football players don't have any right to have any opinion. Right where you were 10 years ago, no opinion. You shouldn't be talking politics. That's not important. In fact, that's not your role. So there is all that mix of negativity, which I'm really surprised about. But I guess we can also think that that comes from somewhere, not just from the perception of Spain, but the perception that England have been given in recent years. I'll have to think more about that.
So that's clip number one. I'm going to play a second clip here for you now, mainly talking about the Sterling penalty incident.
So a couple of the headlines in Denmark. Football's diving home and Denmark was cheated. Now, they weren't cheated, were they? It's not a dive, is it? Surely nobody's going to say that was a dive from Raheem Sterling.
He can't dive, he's English. English players never dive.
No, they never dive. No.
We know that too well. We've all lived
fair
in this
play,
country for long
fair
enough.
Fair play is very high in
only
England.
They never dive. Only at foreigners we dive.
That's not a dive. I mean, it's. I don't think it's a penalty.
Dive, but Sterling helped the referee. Sterling helped the referee. And I was surprised about one thing that Sterling said, and I don't think it was a penalty, but Sterling talked about contact on his ankle. And I was convinced, and in fact, if you look at the pictures that VAR, the referee, was seeing, the pictures stop when there is contact with Jensen, the second defender that is with him, and they hit their hips, each other's hips, and unbalances him. But he's talking about the ankle, and I don't see any contact with the ankle. You can actually
argue
knee.
That... The first one is on the knee.
His knees were really low. That was it, basically. He was already... You feel that, the movement from, I'm already going down, and then you get contact, and then you go to the floor. It's very smartly played.
If you're going to have your knees low, you will give away a penalty. Them's the rules, Christoph.
Yeah,
what about the
effort?
That's what we know.
Yeah, so there you go. Politics, diving. It's not great for England to be this massively unpopular amongst other teams around Europe. And as I said, there's obviously going to be that kind of accusation thrown at you where you had the advantage of playing at home the entire time. The competition was designed for England to win. One of the things that's worth noting is that England were always going to get the semi-finals and the final. Wembley was decided to be the place way, way, way before England actually got there. And one of the other changes that was made, the last 16 game that England played against Germany was not supposed to be at Wembley Stadium. But once Dublin pulled out of this competition, it was decided that that Dublin last 16 game would go to Wembley Stadium. Now, perhaps that was a little unfair, because if England won their group, they would get a last 16 game at home. This was not consistent with any of the other teams, be it a Holland, a Spain, a Italy. All of these teams who had three group matches had to travel immediately and travel for the quarterfinals as well, and never got to return back home. Whereas England, they played their last 16 game at home, they travel for the quarterfinals, and then they're in at home again for the semi-final and the final. But we knew all of this before a ball was kicked. There's no point complaining about it now. And just because one controversial penalty incident brings it all to a head, that doesn't really make too much sense to me. Like, England have got one controversial decision throughout this tournament, and that was it. And it came at the semi-final stage. But Denmark looks so tired. I think England may have scored an extra time anyway. Plus, Harry Kane should have had a penalty in normal time anyway. So I don't think this is fair. I think people are looking for things, especially now all of their teams are eliminated with the exception of Italy. And look, Italy aren't no white knights here. Their behaviour throughout the tournament has been fucking disgusting. And that's been consistent with disgusting behaviour from Italy through major tournaments throughout their entire existence. That incident with Immobile sitting down on the floor, trying to feign an injury for a penalty, and then Italy scoring and him getting up immediately to celebrate, is disgusting. And what's even more disgusting about it is a defence of it by Leonardo Bonucci, saying that you can be injured, but nobody knows the feeling of scoring a goal and the adrenaline that it will give you. So suddenly, Italy scored, and this motherfucker was blessed with the power of antibiotics and healing, and all of a sudden got his ass up off the ground through the pure adrenaline of a goal. So what we should have done with COVID is that all of the COVID sufferers, we should have all thrown them down onto football grounds, and then we should have kicked balls in the net around them, and suddenly we would have cured it. Their lungs would have healed immediately through the adrenaline of balls being kicked into goals while they were surrounding, because nothing cures illness like a goal being scored, according to Dr. Leonardo Bonucci. Go fuck yourself. Like, you are a scumbag. Your team are scumbags. You've been scumbags throughout your entire existence. You've cheated continuously, tournament after tournament after tournament. Yet people are saying that we should support Italy. Yet people are saying England have had the unfair path. Yeah, England are cheaters and things have been designed for England. Look, that's bullshit, and it's rich, especially when the team sitting on the other end is an Italy, or if it was, for example, an Argentina, two teams that can't say shit about anything when it comes down to cheating and things being unfair with the way that they've conducted themselves consistently throughout the years, and even Italy throughout this tournament. That last 30 minutes against Belgium was absolutely disgusting, the way that they milked the clock down with their injuries and that incident with Immobile and everything to do with Italy throughout that entire game. So ask a Belgian fan if he wants Italy to win this tournament on Sunday. So we'll move on from that here. We'll talk more about odds and give out some picks here at the end, but we're going to move over and talk to some England fans that I want to bring on to discuss Sunday's final here right now.
Lots and lots of England possession. Sterling's got it through to Kane now, and Harry Kane has found the net. Well, that didn't take long. One brings two for Harry Kane.
Raheem Sterling doing exactly what he does best. And it looks like that goal against Germany has brought our main man to life.
Short in. And there's Maguire. That's one step nearer. It is a goal early in the second half from the head of Harry Maguire. Just what England wanted. Sterling. Shaw. Kane! Ukraine blown away. England on their way. Ripping their way to the semi-finals of the European Championship.
But it's just a brilliant team goal. and it's a textbook header. He really is. Puts them in real control in this tie.
Oh, there's Kane again! Denied a hat-trick by the gloves of Buschan. That looked as though it was goal-bound.
Mason Mount
with the corner! There's another one! Jordan Henderson has his first goal for England! And England have their fourth of the night!
Yes, he missed the penalty in the warm-up games, but that must have felt absolutely amazing.
At this point, I'm going to bring in one of my closest friends. When I talk about you as like being a close friend, I don't think of you as like someone I've known for ages, but I've now known you for 14 years. I don't know if you are aware of that. So I'm going to bring on Trash Meister here. Trash, can you explain that name and tell people what you do? Because I have a cool job. I get to talk about football and I wouldn't trade places with anybody. But you have the greatest job out of everybody that I'm mates with. So I'm going to let you talk about it and make everybody unbelievably jealous.
Well, first of all, I'm very, very flattered that you say I'm a close friend, you know. And I know we don't see each other that often, but when we do, it's fucking electric, isn't it? But Trashmeister is actually my directing porn name. So I'm currently a director for Harmony Films. Some of you might have seen a few of their titles in the stores down Charing Cross Road, etc., and Private, and a few others. And I've been doing this since 2001 now, so that makes me very old, but kind of keeps me young at the same time.
For my American listeners, this is the number one porn producer in the UK. So just to simplify that down, in case they weren't aware of the production companies, I know because I have stacks of porn under my bed and in my ottoman. So I know what he's talking about. But that's who he is. So
yeah. I mean, it's a very condensed industry now because obviously lots of people watching stuff for free on the tube site. Not so many people buy it anymore, so it's not this huge industry it used to be. It's very condensed, and there's very few production companies going now. So I feel sort of honoured that I'm still working in it and still, smashing it out. And I actually think I'm unemployable in the conventional workplace these days, so thank God for porn.
Tell us about your day-to-day, because you whacked out some pictures today, and that is your day-to-day with the... That was a good list of people that you put out that you're working with yesterday, I believe.
Yeah, but it's been very hard with the pandemic. Obviously, you know, porn and COVID don't go together too well. So you've got a little bit of a...
I do think they go together. I don't think I've ever watched more porn than being in a lockdown.
We had to everyone who works in porn has to have an STI certificate,
right?
So you have, you know, you've got your chlamydias, your gonorrhea, your syphilis, your HIV. Obviously no one can work without a certificate, but at the end of it now we've got COVID on there now, so it's made a massive impact on our industry. We were unable to work for so long, and even traveling has been a pain in the arse. So we just finished shooting in Spain, first time I've been abroad since last September. And I mean, Brexit, for one thing, has made it very difficult, you know, to work in Europe, because you can't just go over there and work anymore. You have to get work permits and everything has to be, you know, legally sort of above board, which is difficult for porn, you know. But and on top of that, you've got the whole testing thing. So 3 days before we came back, we had to get a test in Spain. And then when you get back in the UK, you have to have another test on day 2 and day 8. So I'm still in isolation now. And I'm going to be in isolation for the final, which is really fucking me off.
There's no way to break the law for that.
Well, there is, but there's a 10 grand fine. And they're literally calling me 3 times a day, test and trace, to make sure I'm...
Oh, they
home,
do,
you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean...
And, as much as... I'll tell you what, if we win, I might sneak out with Layla, leave the telly on at home and say, well, we didn't hear you, we were fucked.
Well, as someone who's breaking the law every game, I'm driving to bars with a broken leg. I have no car insurance to do this. So I would advocate you do break the law. Tell us about Layla, because Trash's girlfriend is German and we've knocked Germany out of the competition. I've not spoke to you about sitting there. I've not spoke to you about watching that game. How was that? Because I tried to wind her up and text her, and they've been ignored. My messages to Layla have been ignored completely.
No, it's a little bit of that, but also the fact that people think it's very glamorous working on a porn set, you know, but literally we were working from 8 o'clock in the morning till sometimes midnight every night, like 8 days in a row. And it's very, I'm not looking for sympathy, it's very draining. And there's lots to do. But when that match came on, I said, fuck everyone, right? We were watching this game, you know, 6 o'clock, that was the Spanish time kickoff. We are sitting down and we're watching this match. And she had a Germany shirt, I had my English shirt. And yeah, it was quite fractious and emotional. But I do think because she's been in England for a while now, she, you know, it's her second team now, really. You know, she's got a lot of English inside.
Yeah, so she's going to carry over and support England for the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, she was like properly getting into it, like on Wednesday, you know, like really, really getting emotional, like when she watches Spurs. I've also made her into a Tottenham fan.
and that's what I kind of wanted to get to, because obviously you're on here, you're my mate, you're a poor producer, but we've been to loads of games together. There was a time where I was getting those free comps for Tottenham at Wembley. We went to loads of them. We've been to England games together. So you are a hardcore football fan. Your girlfriend's a hardcore football fan. You're hardcore Spurs. First, before I ask you how the game's going to go, how do you think Kane's tournament's developed? Because there were people that legitimately wanted Calvert-Lewin to come into the team for Harry Kane. They were saying that he's distracted and he's not with it.
Yeah, my view on it is it just takes a bit of bedding in, you know, when anyone starts a tournament. And he's so used to playing with, you know, the likes of Son, Lo Celso, Lamella, you know, Lucas Moura, all these players that know him, know how to feed him, know where he is on the field. All of a sudden you got that Scotland game, you know, where I felt like Sterling, I felt like... you know, a few of the England players, they kind of like were doing individual sort of solo efforts, right, you know, and they weren't really playing as a team. And I just felt like, because sometimes he's not like a classic centre forward where he just sits, you know, in front of the, you know, the midfielders. He does play deep, he does hold the ball up. And I just thought, you know, it just took a bit of time to get that. I mean, that first game, well, second game against Scotland with, I think it was Mount, and we had Foden and we had Sterling in midfield, and a very, very similar types of players. And, and I felt like, they didn't really know how to work Kane into the game. Now, I think that changed a bit when Sancho came on, and it's helping as well now with Walker and...
Saka.
And down that side, and Luke Shaw as well, powering up the wings, and Kane's, you know, his greatest asset for Tottenham this season is just literally holding up the ball, being strong, and bringing other players into play at the same time. So yeah, I just think it's taken a bit of time to gel, but they seem like they're getting there now and they're communicating and they're gelling a bit, yeah.
Well, pre-pandemic, you would have watched more Tottenham than me. During the pandemic, I've been able to watch loads of Tottenham because every game's been on. That's been the only one good thing about lockdown. I noticed a lot that I don't know if it's something in his mind where he wants to become a greater player than he is. Like, he wants to sort of be seen as a Messi and a Ronaldo. He doesn't just want to be a goal scorer. It seems like, for me, it seems like there'd be something in his head where he wants to be a number 10. He doesn't want to be a Shearer or anybody like that who gets in the box, and or a Lineker that gets the these tappings. So you're seeing Kane pulling into this position, and I'm not a fan of that. I was critical, not so much of Kane as a player and wanting him to be dropped, but I didn't understand this dropping really deep, and he's done it a lot for Tottenham as well. I don't know whether this has been implemented by a specific manager, Jose Mourinho, namely, or whether it's something that Kane's doing by himself. But I do just want to see him more in the middle and feeding off those scraps, but he doesn't really seem like he wants to do that now.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a Mourinho factor. The fact that he's, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he had one of the, you know, the highest assists in the season as
well.
Yeah,
he did.
Golden boot. Yeah. So that just shows that he's not only playing the centre-forward role, but he's also playing this other role. And I think he wants to be all things at all times. And it's funny, actually, I was a little bit annoyed with how the season went and how Gareth Bale was just, you know, left on the bench so many games, because maybe he would have one off game and then he'd be dropped. But Kane can go through a game sometimes and two games where, you know, he's kind of like a passenger and he doesn't really do much, but he'll never be dropped. You know, he's always the first name on the team sheet. But he will eventually pay dividends, you know. But he does sometimes, like, he is sometimes guilty of going missing and I think trying to be more of a player than he actually is, you know, sometimes.
How do you see Sunday going? Are you worried about it at all? How do you see it playing out?
I am.
Yeah.
I said, this has remnants to me of Euro 96. I think after the Scotland win, if I'm correct, we played Spain afterwards.
We played and Scotland and then we played Holland and destroyed them. Then we played Spain.
Oh, that was it. Right. So, yeah, we had the Holland game and it was amazing. And then we played Spain. And it was just like, you know, this sort of, you know, sort of tight, nervous affair. And I can see, because the Italians are so tactically astute, I can see this going down the same road. I really can. I can see a 0-0 after extra time. I really can.
You're not far off what I think. I think it'll be, I'm definitely on board with it being under 2.5 goals in the game. And I can see it going to extra time. But I also believe, if Harry Kane's missing penalties, that means the nerves have got to him. And he just doesn't miss penalties. And I don't like England in a penalty shootout in this game.
Yeah. Do you know what? I've seen every Kane penalty that he's taken in the last fucking 3 years. And he always hits that side netting when it goes in, just boom, right in the corner, right in the corner, right in the corner. Goalkeeper, no chance. Score, score, score. And that was the first time I'd seen him hit a penalty, you know, in that two-thirds area, in the goalkeeper saving area. And it was like, oh my God, what the fuck's going on? And it was only because Schmeichel tried to catch it that he was lucky enough to get the rebound. Otherwise, if he palmed it away, you know, maybe we wouldn't be having this conversation now.
Yeah, I mean, I think Denmark were pretty tired, so I think they would have got another chance. But it's difficult to get over Kane missing, and then it's difficult then to go into that shootout with Kane missing anyway. I also think they had a better goalkeeper. I also think the real Pickford turned up, which is worrying to me, because he was having a decent tournament, but I've seen him in a Premier League this season and it's not been great.
Yeah,
what's your, to close out, what's your prediction here? What would you give out as a bet?
I've seen online now that they're offering, let me just bring it up, 7-1 on a 0-0.
Right.
I'm sorry to be boring, you know, but
no, we're just trying to make money here, so it's fine.
I really think it's going to be so cagey, and the Italians are so good at defending, you know, and we've got a decent defence as well. Everyone's going to be scared of making a mistake, and I think we're going to go down that road. And unfortunately, I think we're going to go through to that old England scenario of extra time and penalties too.
All right, yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I'm going to give my picks out at the end of the show, but yeah, I'm very aligned with what you're saying. Do you want to give out any social media, anything before you come off?
Oh yeah, if you want to follow me and you like porn, Twitter at Trashmeister, which is Trash, M-E-I-S-E-R, Meister. which is master in German. And yeah, it'd be good to hear from you. Talk about football instead of porn sometimes. Yeah, that sounds good.
Thank you, mate. Hopefully we are both wrong and they just win this game 3-0. And it's comfortable, but yeah, I have a feeling it's not going to be very comfortable for us to watch. Thanks for coming on, mate, and talking to us.
No worries. Love you lots, Billy.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Sterling. He's still turkey enough. Kane. Grealish. Shaw. Across for Sterling! Seen scenes like this in a football ground for a long, long time.
He starts the move, Raheem Sterling. He's positive. He's direct. He drives at them, plays the ball into Harry Kane, continues his run. And that little bit of there, that little bit of quality, the hold of the ball, and our man, our main man, our top goal scorer in this tournament, Raheem Sterling, on home turf, puts us 1-0 up.
Oof. There's an error, and Havertz is onto it, and he's got the run through the middle. It is Thomas Muller, England's nemesis, but not this time. That never used to happen, never ever.
He had time on his hands to pick his spot, Thomas Muller. He just drags it wide.
He can't get back to his feet. England press regardless with Shaw, and now Grealish. Grealish in! Comes the captain, 2-0 England, Harry Kane's championship has begun.
This man's been waiting a lifetime to stick that one in the back of the net. And Jack Grealish, another assist, he wasn't going to miss that one that time, Harry Kane. It hadn't been his best game, but he's waited, and he's waited for that chance to come. And that feeling, well, it's what he's waited for a long, long time.
Stones down, Henderson clear. Brilliant. And that is it. It's finally happened. England beat Germany at a major tournament. If you're an England fan, take a look around and drink it in. Where you are, who you're with. Because this is one of those landmark football moments that don't come around too often. The next is on Saturday. Onwards to Rome, where things could get better and better and better.
Okay, we're going to bring on another guest now. This guy is actually my cousin Harry, but Harry and his brother Alfie have been going to the games, so that's what I want to talk about with Harry. How you doing, mate? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Just a bit upset with my leg situation, not being able to get to these games. As someone that's been going to nearly every game since 89, you want to go to a major tournament if you can. But what happened with me was there was loads of refunds at the beginning where the capacity was reduced. So I had some tickets. I would have dragged myself there with a broken leg, as you know, but they all got sent back. So I've still been trying to get to these games. But you've been going, you've been paying over the odds for them, but it's obviously been worth the money, because how often are we going to beat Germany in a major tournament? Can you compare the atmosphere to these games? Because you go to West Ham all the time, you've been to England friendlies, you've been to other games possibly in the Nations League. Just compare this atmosphere for this tournament and the expectation.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I've been following football my whole life, as you have, Bill. You know, it's one of those things that you really can't put it into words, that Germany game. I mean, I've been at some games that have had, you know, real, real good atmospheres. You know, the FA Cup final, West Ham, Liverpool. I've been to cup finals, not many, but with them. But that Germany game was different level. I mean, we paid above the odds, but it was one of those moments where we looked at each other at the end of it and went, you know, are we going to see this again? You know, hopefully with this side we will, but the general atmosphere around the ground, in the ground, before, after kickoff has been unbelievable, to be honest, which is why we done it again, paid above the odds and went for the semi. You know, it's electric down there. I kind of compare it to the Olympics a little bit. That buzz we had around London in 2012,
seems to have carried through to this tournament, you know. So it's been brilliant, mate.
But everybody always says it's coming home. We've been saying it since 96. But with this team, do you believe... I mean, previously we've had Rio, Terry, Gerrard, Lampard, Beckham, Rooney. We've had world-class teams before. We've fallen well short. Is there a different expectation there? Or is there still... Or do you kind of like... pull it back a bit? As someone that's not a casual football fan, as someone that goes and watches a lot of football and knows, have you pulled back your expectation? Are you just fully on board now? Do you really believe in these players more so than those?
I was on board before the tournament started. I really thought we'd win it this year. You know, as a football fan, following these players... Yes, we've had the Gerrards, the Rooneys, the Lampards.
I had some friends saying, let's finish second in the group and make sure we don't get this last 16 tie, but you were not bothered.
No way. I thought we could beat any team in this Euros. I don't think there's a team, all right, on paper maybe, but our squad really is. The power of what we've had coming off the bench, I think, has been different level this year. And I thought before the game, I don't think we've ever had as many winners. You know, I know we've had the odd winner, but they always seem like they never got on. They always seem like there was something behind, you know, or in the background that was going on that was forcing the players to, you know, the Rooneys and the Gerrards to actually not go on. Whereas you look at this group of lads that have come through the 21s together, they've come through youth football together, some of them have grown up together. They look like a group of winners, you know. I thought we'd win it beforehand. They're young, they're fearless, we've got pace, they've got ability, they can beat a player, they've been in Champions League finals, some of them have won it, you know. They've been on the big stages, and I said at the beginning of the tournament, I think it's ours. I think it's ours to lose, especially at Wembley. You know, 7 out of 8 games at Wembley. I thought it was ours to lose from the start.
Well, that's the thing. Coming into the tournament, my concerns were the political side of things, which we'll talk about next, and also the fact that we had players playing in the Champions League final. They were rested for the friendlies. I saw France playing their full team. I saw Benzema, Griezmann and Mbappe playing in the friendlies. Everybody seemed to be prepared. But we didn't seem to put our full-strength team out for those friendlies. We're actually playing squad players that weren't even going to come to the tournament. So I was worried about those couple of 1-0s. And then obviously with the politics seeping in, there was a divide over the whole taking the knee, not to take the knee. My stance is... I've got no particular stance on BLM or whatever, but with the kneeling, because it was causing a divide, I thought that's going to be a problem for the team. Have you seen any of that seeping in? You've been to grounds, you've obviously experienced what happens when there is a divide in terms of the reaction to it when they do kneel down. What's it like in the stadium? And also, were you concerned that it was going to cause a divide on the pitch in terms of where there's a disconnect between the crowd and the players?
I think firstly to say that, you know, I feel the same as you. I don't really feel one way or the other, but I think the divide, I think the good thing for the team was the divide didn't seem to come in the camp this time. It seemed to be that all the players had a particular view. They took that view and they all stood by each other, which I think shows in how they play. I think that's the first thing. The second thing with where the divide comes in and being in the ground with it is probably more so with the fans. You know, the English fans, you know, are many things. You know, passionate's one of them, and there's a lot of different views around different stadiums, different parts of the country, as you know, Bill. You know, you could go and speak to somebody in London and speak to somebody in, you know, I was talking to somebody in Chesterfield, with two completely different, you know, attitudes towards these type of things. Personally, I don't think politics should be brought into sport and into football. And what it has done in the stadiums, from what I've seen, is it's caused a bit of a divide between the fans as opposed to the players. You know, if you are one of those people that have been brought up on football, when you boo the other team, you know, or you boo the national anthem, or, you know, or you're opposed to somebody taking the knee, I think there is a bit more friction than we've ever seen.
But how has that manifested itself? So if you've got a booer and a non-booer, have you seen any confrontation from it, or just a dirty look, or just a bunch of looks going in that direction? How is it sort of manifested in the stand?
Yeah, I mean, there's confrontation. There's definitely confrontation. I mean, I've sitting in front of a couple of guys arguing about booing the national anthem, you know, I think the problem with this tournament is there is an air of relief about, you know, about coming out of a lockdown and things like that. Everybody genuinely is excited. I don't think people really want to be row, and I think this point kind of gives people everybody loves a debate now, everybody loves an argument, you know. So I think that just gives people a reason to argue within the ground. Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen the confrontation in, you know, in and out of the ground about booing the anthems, taking the knees, people really, you know, really arguing about it. But one way or another, it hasn't affected the players. I think that's the main thing. I think it hasn't carried through into the atmosphere, into getting behind the team. You know, there's just an underlined debate, I suppose, or a topic of conversation that fans are happy to argue about.
Well, Guillaume Balague said today, he goes, he's so surprised with the reaction in Spain in terms of the dislike towards England, the playing style that England have put in this competition, the way that it's been designed for us to win. It seems like the catalyst has been the penalty that Sterling got, where there's a lot of headlines about it. And now a lot of teams around Europe have turned. So they've ignored the fact that Immobile is sitting on the floor and he's celebrating as soon as a goal goes in. And now it's turned towards England. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh, you had six home games and you got this penalty because you're at home. So they were kind of waiting to jump on us with this penalty as kind of now giving the catalyst for the rest of Europe to jump on England. Do you think that that's going to have any sway in the game? How do you see it playing out? And do you think it is us against all of Europe and this could influence the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it is us against all of Europe, whether we like it or not. But I think the reality of it is, you know, yes, we got a penalty. You know, was it soft? Maybe. But in today's game, maybe if you look at some of the decisions that go, especially in the Premier League, I think it was a stonewall penalty. But, you know, it is what it is. They're always going to think we've had a home advantage. I think it was... Was it the Ukraine game? You know, we had four German referees, you know, and we won 4-0. I don't think we've got any bias towards England. I don't think it will affect the way we play. What you know, there's going to be England fans that are sitting there going, I want to play the Brazil way. I want to see us, you know, beat players and win 4-5-0. That's not international football. It never has been international football. Even the great teams of you know, 10, 15 years ago, the Brazil teams, They weren't smashing teams 5 or 6-0. So I think we've got to accept that Gareth Southgate isn't a Pep Guardiola. Well, I say Pep Guardiola. He isn't a forward-thinking manager as such. But we've not conceded a goal from open play. We're solid at the back, which even with the likes of Terry and Rio and, you know, all the players we've had of past, we couldn't say that. You know, and I think the reason we go on to win is because of that. I think, yeah, we'd love to see some sexy football. But I don't think Southgate's the type of manager that will let that affect the way the players are going to go out and play. Whether we like it or not, they're probably going to go out, set up with five at the back, you know, and play our game. And you know, if we're in the final at a tournament, I don't think we can really be too complacent of it.
I was going to ask you that. Do you think we'll go back to 3-4-3 or do you think we'll play 4-4-3-3? But you answered it already. You think we're going to go back to the 3-4-3, which is actually really a back five. So you think Walker's going to go and sit in as the third centre back and go back to the wing backs?
Yeah, I think he'll do what he did against Germany. I think he'll do what he did in the last, you know, second half of the extra time against Denmark. I think he'll go for five and he'll sit right.
The difference is that Germany we match their formation for formation, but the Italians are going in with a back four. So you don't think that'll make a difference?
No, I still think he'll go with five. You know, we all want to see those four. You know, there's going to be so many different opinions of having Sancho sitting on the bench or, you know, the likes of Rashford not coming on, or Grealish is obviously the big talking point. Grealish, I've never seen a player have that much hype around him for so long. It spills into the ground. The cheer that man got when he comes onto the pitch is phenomenal. And we'd love to see him. But the reality is Southgate wants to go with a certain type of player. And I think that certain type of player will hurt the Italians. You know, those centre-backs that they've got, they looked tired in the last 20 minutes of the Spain game. That Spain team shouldn't have taken them as far as they did. And if you have got Sterling or Saka or Sancho on the pitch with a bit of pace, I think we can hurt them. So I think he goes the same as what he did against Germany. You know, we try and keep the ball and we hit them on the counter.
Give us a bet to close out, because it's a soccer gambling podcast, so we need something from you to finish up.
Sure. Look, I think, like I've just touched on there, I think the Italians are going to come out of the blocks firing. You know, that's the only way they win the game. They will lose their legs. So I can see Italy half-time, England full-time. It is my bet for the tournament. I've done a lot of stones on Maguire first goals because I think our chances do come from corners. But I think Italy half-time, England full-time, or even Harry Kane a brace to win the tournament, you know, the highest goal scorers for the tournament. I think having a bad tournament, he might slip in and win it, knowing him. But that's what I'd go with, something along those lines.
Thank you, mate. Any social media you want to plug, anything, or just want to come on and chat?
No, just coming on to chat, mate. Good to speak to you.
And you, mate. Thank you for coming on. Cheers.
No worries, mate. Speak soon.
once again.
So up next, I'm going to bring on a regular here on the Soccer Gambling Podcast and the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. He's been on talking about football before. He's been on talking about boxing before. He's won you a load of money in boxing. He's a former boxer. I'm going to bring in Mr. Jeff Cohen.
Hey, how you doing, Bill?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. How have you been enjoying this tournament?
Yeah, you know what? I really have enjoyed it. It's brought the country together. England have actually played well after a slow start. The Italians, who I knew would be good, and I thought putting them 8-1 at the start was absolute criminal from the bookies. But
you said that at the start.
I made sure I got on that early doors. So I wouldn't say it's a win-win for me on Sunday, because I'll happily lose my bet. But if England don't win, which I want them to win, then I'll be about £700 up.
So, but you're part Italian anyway, aren't you? Your son's got an Italian name.
In ancestry, my granddad had it in him, and my son's name's Luca. But I'm fully English, and I want us to win on the Sunday in the final.
So, as you've mentioned that, what do you think about the feel of this tournament? Because we've all been through it before, and I think you're closer to my age than the other guests that we've had on. I remember Italian 90 made me a fan, and I also think Italian 90 saved English football, because I don't think there'd be a Premier League without Italian 90. I think people looked at that and thought, do you know what? This isn't just for hooligans and guys that like to go out. I think we can save this. I think we can make a product for everybody, because everybody was invested in that tournament. Since then, we've had like disappointments. We've put all our eggs in baskets with Beckham, Gerrard, Owen, Rooney, all of these great teams that came along and didn't do anything. And now this team's come along. But do you feel sort of like that the Premier League is very, very commercialised and international football's kind of been put to the back? And whereas we got these major tournaments every 2 years and they were always a big deal, does this feel as big because there's just so much football on?
Yeah, I mean, it's really bizarre. It's taken like a 180 turn, because, as you know, from back in the day, the reason that England, the golden generation, so to speak, and we didn't win anything with a team that included Beckham, Owen, Gerrard, Rooney, all these wonderful players, Lampard, Scholes, and they, you know, Rio Ferdinand came out and said that the reason we didn't, in his opinion, and everyone agreed, was that there was division in the camp. The Man United players stayed with the Man United players, the Chelsea players stayed with the Chelsea players, the Arsenal players stayed with the Arsenal players, and they didn't gel. And that's the reason. Now, in a weird way, now, after the whole Super League debacle, where the top six clubs kind of, you know, really put their eggs in that basket and showed that they don't care for English football, in a weird way now, it's flipped to the England football team of the country is now the one where everyone's together and in it together, and the Premier League is the one where they're kind of, you know, there's division, and, you know, it's like the players have come away from all that pressure of the champion of the Super League into England, and they've become one. And you look at it now and you see the likes of Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips, who last season, you know, Rice, you know, I know he's a decent player. Calvin Phillips, I saw numerous times in the Championship at Bir Eze, absolutely destroy him, and thought, how the hell is this guy playing for England? But to be fair, he's been one of our best players. And I think now the Premier League has become that hotbed of, you know, division, and, you know, club chairman and club managers and players, you know, they're all disagreeing with what they want, and, you know, people are resigning from positions like the Manchester United guy did, because, you know, he wanted the Super League. It didn't happen. So England's almost like a nice getaway for them to go and represent their country. And you can tell the squad is as harmonious and as together as any England squad in my lifetime.
So speaking of that, obviously there's been some political issues going into this. The players have been united by taking a knee. The fans haven't exactly been on board of it. I'm not one that says sports and politics mix, so it's been very, very like black and white, and it's not a black and white situation. If you are against the knee, you're a racist, but I'm not white, so that's the thing. Like, I've been very much a case of, how can I be racist? I'm not white with this opinion. I just don't think that politics mix.
It doesn't matter what colour you are. You don't have to be white to be racist. But the problem being is that, as you said, there's a whole lot behind it. I mean, you know, I didn't support them taking the knee. I certainly wouldn't have booed it, though, at the ground.
No.
Because it comes across as, you know, in that sense, it comes across as a kind of almost a racist thing. I think taking the knee was far too closely linked to the Black Lives Matter political movement, not the actual true words, Black Lives, of course they matter. Black Lives, of course they matter. All lives matter. But the taking the knee was linked to the Black Lives Matter political movement, the ones that were looting, the ones that were, you know, doing all the stuff that you saw in the summer. So, as I said, I think a better thing would have been for the two teams to hold hands around the centre circle with a big thing in the middle, you know, saying against racism, would have probably been better.
Yeah.
I just think taking the knee was too closely linked to the political movement, and that is why it caused such a Iran, and you know, and it was such a negative thing for some football fans.
Well, let's talk about Raheem Sterling, because you're a QPR fan. His roots are with QPR.
Yeah.
He's kind of been the face of this. He's been seen as like the face of this political movement. And at the same time, I feel like that has resulted in his accomplishments in his tournament being overblown. I don't think he's had a bad tournament. Obviously, he can't have done. He's got a goal record, which is great, which we'll talk about in a second. He's been in the right place to score the goals, although they've been easy. But there've been a lot of misses. And there's a lot of times where he's got the ball and he runs into crowded areas where he shouldn't be going. His final ball isn't very good. When I saw him on a free kick the other day, my immediate reaction is, why is he taking it? I find myself constantly screaming at Sterling during his tournament. For me, not the player of the tournament at all. But I think, again, the political stuff comes into it where he'll be made into the player of the tournament. If England win this, he'll get it automatically. So yeah. What do you think? What's your... I know you're honest, even though you're a QPR fan, you'll be honest about this. You'll be able to assess this without having a casual head on it. We always laugh about casual football fans and casual boxing fans.
Because I think he's a wonderful player. We found, and the beauty of the story behind it, that QPR scouts went out to like a goals AstroTurf pitch and saw this young lad at 15 years old, took him on, made him the ball, 14 years old, sorry, made him what he was, sold him to Liverpool. Liverpool promised him a big house and look after him. Of course, any young lad's going to go there. And as a result of it, he joined Man City and my club got £6 million as a sell-on clause. So I like the romantic story behind it. I also like Sterling in that he's very humble. If you're looking at performances, we spoke about it before, I didn't realise this, but Raheem Sterling scored 15 goals in his last 24 England games. Now that includes qualifiers, probably the last World Cup even. And I agree with what you said, he is wasteful sometimes. But the thing with Sterling is that his end product is there. Stats you can't argue with as a winger, 15 goals in 24 games. But it's with Sterling, in my opinion, it's the worry he will bring. So the Italians on Sunday, they are not going to want to face the pace of Sterling and Saka, even Sancho and Ida. They're all quick. And you're not going to get around the likes of Bonucci and Chiellini with good old-fashioned, you know, centre-forward play. The only way you're going to punish them, and it's been shown in this tournament, is with a bit of pace. And I think that's where Raheem Sterling will be key. And, you know, personally, I would start Saka on the left because he has got lightning pace, ready with Jack Grealish to come on, you know, in the latter stages. But I do like Raheem Sterling. I think he's done a really, really good tournament. I do think you're probably right. For me, England's player in the tournament has probably either been Rice or Phillips as a player, because they come on. But, yeah, Raheem Sterling has got the goals. You know, he is kind of the face of the England camp as such. So he probably will get it, which I wouldn't mind. But, yeah, I like Raheem Sterling. You know, I like the fact that he comes from his roots from my club. And he's come on and he's doing the business. 15 goals in 24 games. You can't argue with that.
Well, I mean, for me, I know it's a massively biased opinion, but I think Luke Shaw has established himself as the best left-back in the world in this tournament. And I think Harry Maguire has established himself as someone that ain't no joke anymore. He signed for United. Everybody said it was too much money. We had the 13th best defence before we signed him. Now we've got the second best defensive record. He's shown his importance.
That you can't argue with, right?
No.
They are stats. And that's a good shout. I was talking about Luke Shaw to my friend the other day, and I agree. He's always been, when Southampton had him and he joined Man United, he was the wonder kid. He lost his way, and then the Mourinho thing happened. And you know what? I saw an interview with him the other day and he said, I'm playing with a smile on my face now, which is lovely to see, because that's why he's played. He's always had the ability. He had his weight problems and his injury problems. But yeah, I agree. You're probably right. As far as established themselves, Luke Shaw has really, really established himself. It's between the three, Shaw, Rice and Phillips, who have been England's best player for this tournament. But I really do like Luke Shaw and potentially, one of the best left-backs in the world now.
So let's talk about the game before we finish up. I think the way to beat this team is with the pace. We've seen the player that caused them the most problems in this entire tournament was Doku of Belgium. The problem is that Belgium set up with a 3-4-3 formation, and once Doku had beaten a couple of men, he didn't have the support inside the box. Belgium approached that game strangely in a negative way when they had better attacking options. My cousin was just on before you, and he expects it to be a cagey game where he thinks England are going to go back to the back three, 3-4-3, which is basically a back five. I don't really want to see that. I want to see us get at them and press them up high at the pitch. How are you expecting for it to play out?
I mean, the thing is with this, people need to understand these Italians, they need one goal and they can close the game out. So you have to be cautious. But I believe, and I spoke to my dad earlier, I believe it will be a draw. I can see England's defence ruling out, and Italy's defence ruling out goals. So I can actually see it being a 0-0 draw.
That's unbelievable, because we got that at 7-1 and everybody has come on and said they can see it.
Yeah, but this is the thing. Southgate is a cautious manager. Now, I don't think it's wise to go for them, because if we don't break them down and it's not working and we need to change mid-game and they nick a goal and decide to shut shop up and we've already gone at them with our attacking option that didn't work, that's very risky. I think Southgate will do more of a... suck it and see, you know, let the first half fizzle out, see what happens, and then hopefully bring Grealish on and nick a goal. I don't think we can go at them. They're too good for us just to go at them. If we go gung-ho at them and it doesn't work, that's plan A, B and C gone. We're not going to beat them by bringing on, you know, Jordan Henderson to defend a 0-0 draw.
So,
you know, it's for me, I think it's going to be very, very cagey affair. I don't think there'll be... I mean, definitely, if you're looking at unders, you know, under goals and whatnot, it's going to be under... under two goals, I believe. And I think if you get on Bet365, they pay out on a ball draw. So if it's 0-0, you get your money back. So you can, in fact, bet the draw, bet 1-1 or the draw. And if it's 0-0, you get your money back. Or if it's a draw and it wins, you win your money. So I think 0-0 is a very, very good bet. I think it will go... Do you know what? I think this is England. It's going for penalties. It will go to penalties. And we'll be put through the mill again as fans.
Yeah, I don't like us on penalties. I don't like the way Harry Kane took that penalty in extra time. So if his nerves are like that for extra time, I don't know how the other players are going to cope with a shootout. That is my main concern. I love Italy on penalties at 12-1. Not I love it in a sense that I want it to happen, but I like it as a bet. Any bet that you want to give out other than the under, is that your main way that you would go?
Yeah, I mean, I believe a draw is a good price. I would lump heavily on a draw. Looking at cards as well, I often win a lot, and you know this, I win a lot on the first player booked. And I think if you're looking at fullbacks, either the Italian fullbacks or Chiellini, because they're going to be facing pacey players, and it only takes a little trip, just like the penalty with Sterling, a little touch. And I think early, Southgate is adventurous in any way, shape or form. Early on, he'll be telling them to get at the fullbacks, you know, get a booking, put them on edge for the rest of the game. So if you look at, I don't know the odds yet, but certainly if you look at first booking player, maybe Chiellini.
Well, you've got any time here. Any time Emerson, 5-1 is massive. Any time Di Lorenzo, 7-2. Any time booking, massive. Chiellini, 7-2, any time. These are big prices.
I mean, you get your real value at first, but so if they're going to get booked, they'll be one of the first ones because they're the defensive players. But, I mean, if I have a quick look now, if we look at first player booked, I mean, we're looking at this now. I mean, wow, where are we? Chiellini is 16-1 to be the first player booked.
Yep.
For £10, it wins you 170. Now, for me, he should be favourite because he's facing Raheem Sterling. The other guy, the Emerson that you mentioned...
20-1.
First player booked, Emerson is...
I've got 20-1 here, and I've got Di Lorenzo at 12-1.
20-1, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's where the money is, so you don't have to put big stakes out. So your guests can put £5, £10 down and still win back big. But listen, it's a tough one to score. But I just think you look at it, the pace of the wingers are going to cause them a lot of trouble. And I think early on, Southgate will be saying to Sterling, get at them, you know, get that booking. You've got then Chiellini and then Emerson on a knife edge, you know, for the next, whatever, 60, 70 minutes if we get a book in early. So that's definitely one bet. I think go for the draw. And other than that, sit back and try and enjoy it as much as you can.
Can we get you back? I think Wilder and Fury has been cancelled again. It's not 100% confirmed, but it looks like it can. But when it does go down eventually, or whenever we do have a big fight, can we get you back on?
Of course you can. Yeah, listen, there's a loads coming up now. There's some very good fights coming up. There's a couple in the makings. Hopefully, Conor Benn's going to fight the.
But Pacquiao Spence, you're going to come on and talk about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, look, that's a legend. Pacquiao fighting Errol Spence, who I called
second biggest fight of the year after Mayweather and Paul.
Yeah.
I want to get into that with you. I want to get into this whole celebrity boxing thing with you. I want to when we do that show. Yeah, we need to do a whole show. Give us your social media before you go.
Give us my what? Sorry.
Your social media before you go.
Oh, it's at and then left hook QPR. Left hook QPR.
All right, thanks, Jeff. Cheers for coming on. Thanks, mate.
Cheers, Billy.
No worries.
Take care. Bye, mate.
Performance from Italy, been outstanding, and this man, he's grown in the game. One of the best first half of football I've seen from Italy ever.
My final guest that I wanted to bring in, I actually have known him for a long, long time, about over 20 years, actually. But I haven't spoken to him for a while. I saw his opinion on this game on Facebook, and it was very different to everybody else we had on. I'll be honest with you, he's definitely the best looking person that I've had on. If the listeners see your body, they're going to get jealous. But I had to bring you on for your opinion. It is Terry Long. So, Terry, you had something completely different to say about how this game's going to play out on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I've just watched the Spanish game, and they seem to have the blueprint to beat Italy. I mean, the kind of interchangeable and versatility of the front three, kind of run them ragged, to be honest with you. I mean, if they had a goal scorer, Almal had a couple of...
But that's the thing I was going to say to you straight away. Do you think that we'll keep the ball like that? Because we haven't kept the ball. We've not had 60 or 70, over 60% or nowhere near 70% in any game. They're averaging 72 over the course of the tournament.
Yeah, that's a good stat. I think when he comes deep and picks the ball up, that's going to drag a defender out and create a little bit more space and maybe give us a bit more space to play. But I mean, obviously with Sterling, he's better running at players, so he might have to come a bit deeper, pick the ball up a bit deeper and run at them. I mean, they're missing their best fullback in Spinazzola. I mean, he's been the difference for them, isn't he? I mean,
a few guys picked up on that as we were analysing the game. We know the biggest problem that Italy have had in the whole tournament was Doku of Belgium. He was just running in at them. But nobody was... They didn't have a... Belgium didn't... De Bruyne was off that day. They didn't have a Lampard or a Sterling or somebody coming in for the second ball that did anything with what Doku did. So he was putting... He was beating the fullback and putting balls into empty spaces. Like Lukaku can't be relied on to do everything. He can't get onto the end of every ball, and nobody was breaking their neck to get in there. That was what we noticed.
Exactly, yeah, we've got to go beyond Kane. We've got to get runners going on beyond Kane. But I think certainly match them up in terms of the formation. I mean, do they have much danger going forward? I mean, I don't think we have to pay KG. I think we just play with confidence and freedom. I know it's a final and anything can happen. You can freeze, but I think if we play with freedom and confidence, I think, you know, what do we have to worry about up there? You know, Immobile's been pretty awful. What's he got? Is he great in the air? He's got no pace. Maguire, I think Maguire's been really, really good this tournament. I think he looked good coming out of defence and playing the ball. So, you know, obviously they've got Insigne, who's quite dangerous, but, you know, he's much more dangerous when Spinazzola plays on that side and gives him a little space to cut back in and shoot. I mean, I'd rather see us take him on the outside, let balls come into the box and we'll deal with it, rather than letting Chiesa and Insigne cut inside and have a shot. I think we can let them go on the outside. They, you know, he hasn't got a left foot anyway, so I don't think the quality is going to be that good coming in the box anyway, that we can just clear our lines, you know?
It's weird because I'm worried about the game because a few weeks ago, around about the time the quarterfinals were happening, as a United fan, I was looking at the players in the tournament, and I wrote an article about how I didn't want anybody from the other teams apart from Belgium, where I would take Lukaku back. I would sign Tielemans of Leicester. Obviously, Kevin De Bruyne gets into the Man United team. And the only other one was Donnarumma, I think, is better than what we've got in goal. If you look around the rest of them, I couldn't find anybody from Denmark, from any other players from Belgium, Italy, Spain. I didn't find anybody that I wanted to sign. And then when you look through the England team, I'll take Grealish. I'll take Stones as a partner for Maguire. I'll take Calvin Phillips, who's better than McTominay. We've signed Sancho. We take Kane. There's loads of players there. And when I was making the combined 11s in my article, I was putting in 8 England players and 3 Italy players and 8 England players and 3 Spain players and 9 England players and 2 Denmark players. It was pretty overwhelming that we had the better players. But I'm still worried about the game. I'm worried if I'm sitting there on Sunday and he sets up with 3-4-3, which we know is a back five. I don't think that we need to do that, but I can see that happening.
Yeah. Were you not worried about France? I mean, they were obviously the team.
Well, France weren't in the last 8 when I wrote the article. By the time, obviously that would, I would favour France in a lot of areas. But once they were out of the tournament, and I looked at the last 8 teams. Yeah, I would like Tielemans' class, De Bruyne's class. Lukaku's got a lot better since he left United. But there is no one I wanted to buy from the other players. No,
it's like you say, there's no world beaters out there anymore. You know, you've gone of the yesteryear when you looked at teams and you were frightened. And do you know what I mean? But now, just play with confidence. They haven't got any better players than us. You know, we've got more pace going forward. We've got 2 similar midfield holding players. Obviously, they're slightly better on the ball in terms of creativity. But I just think Mount needs to get on a little bit more. And if it's not working in the first half, if you get Grealish on, he's good at getting the ball in close and going by players, which we don't really have. You know, when Sterling gets it and there's someone on top of him,
he's been reluctant. He's never played Grealish at the top of the midfield. He did it for one game. But he hasn't. Yeah. He doesn't like him there. He wants him out wide. Where I think Grealish is more dangerous if he's in behind Kane. But he wants 2 holding midfield players, and he wants a utility centre midfielder instead of a attacking midfielder in any kind of free role. I don't think Mount plays with that much freedom. I don't know if he's created much at Chelsea. In fact, Chelsea's issue even when Tuchel came in, it was a lack of goals. He won the Champions League by sorting out the defence. It wasn't necessarily that he got Mount and Havertz and Werner all clicking. Tuchel didn't do that.
That's the only thing. I mean, we've been brilliant at the back, haven't we? I mean, the only goal we conceded is a free kick, and when I looked at it, I don't think it was actually a free kick that we gave away. The ref, I wasn't sure it was a free kick, and other than that, we looked pretty solid, haven't we? So, as you say, it's a similar kind of setup to Chelsea. They won the Champions League and have a good base at the back 4, nicking the odd goal here and there, you know?
We've had 4 guys on, and actually Pickford's escaped everyone's an analysis, but I'm concerned, about the real Pickford turning up to the tournament, because that free kick's gone.
He was shaky in the semi-final, didn't he? His distribution was a bit.
I mean, the cameras weren't even watching. There was one point where they were showing a replay of something else, and they were back on the attack. And then when they caught the replay of it, Pickford had just straight out chucked the ball out to one of their players. The free kicks.
Yeah, I think ITV weren't even expecting it, were they?
No, and
some of his movements.
If the director was an Everton fan, he probably would have just stayed on it, because anything can happen with him. But yeah, the free kick's down the centre of the goal. I'm just not too sure. I don't want to lose a game on Sunday because Pickford's done something stupid. And also, I don't want to go down to penalty shootout, because if Harry Kane's bottling penalties in extra time because he's so nervous, because that's the worst penalty kick I've seen him take. Everything for Spurs, as someone mentioned, is in the inside of the net, right, or banging it right. If it's down the middle, it's hard, solid down the middle. This penalty kick looked nervous, and if Kane's affected by it, I don't want to be playing these in a shootout at all.
No, I mean, the other thing is, I mean, who are they playing left back? Are they playing Emerson? He's hardly had any game time this season.
Yeah, it'll be Emerson, yeah.
You've got to get at him. You've got to get at him. Just let the wingers change round from left to right. Just pull them apart. The And Di Lorenzo, I don't think, is a brilliant fullback either. So
no, a guy came in before you, Jeff, actually said that he would have money on both of them to get booked at any time, and they were both around about 4-1 just to pick up a booking.
That's a good bet. I like that. I might jump on Bet365 now. Pretty lively.
What have you got for a bet to that you would look?
I was just going to do. Oh, it's 7-2 England half time, full time. I think we've got to come out sharp. We can't. We've got to be at it early doors. And I think we need to get. I think if we get one, I think we might get two or three. To be honest with you, but that's just my own opinion. But one off game, anything can happen. But we've certainly got, you know, the ability, the momentum. Italy haven't lost for so long. They're, you know, you can't keep winning and winning and winning. And they look like, you know, obviously Spain are Spain, but they pulled them apart. And if they had a goal scorer, they would have nicked about three or four goals, you know.
When you see Grealish coming off a trippier in extra time, and then you want to go for a half-time, full-time, are you concerned that 60, 65 minutes, we're pulling on another defender?
I hate it when they do that, you know, just sitting back and just inviting pressure for 30, you know.
From a knackered Denmark team, which I didn't think was necessary.
No, that is my worry. If we are just one goal ahead, we just sit deep and just invite pressure on, and you know, it's worrying times. We just got to keep pressing. I think just keep pressing and go for the second goal. You know, we've got to the final. Everyone's happy. Let's just go and enjoy it. And if we win, we win. You know, and just play with a bit of freedom. But I mean, we've certainly got more coming off the bench as well. I mean, we actually looked quite fit the other night, didn't we? We looked pretty fit. And Italy were absolutely knackered the other night. And we got Foden coming off the bench, Grealish, Trippier, who's good at set pieces. Who have they got to come off the bench?
Yeah, Sancho, Rashford. Rashford's not even had a kick this tournament. So.
Yeah, Rashford. They've got Belotti. He's absolutely useless. Plays for Torino. Who else is there that's going to create any chances for them? Or you know, who's a match winner? Who's the other geezer in midfield? Locatelli. He's all right.
Yeah, Arsenal are looking at him, yeah.
Yeah, he's quite good in midfield. He does his job, doesn't he? But who else they got that's going to come on and make any difference? Chiesa's good. I always said that when I saw on that Juventus. I don't know why they didn't start him. They started with Berardi, but since he started him, he's made a difference, hasn't he? So I think if we can, you know, stop those two midfield players playing with high intensity, high press, and obviously, yeah, look, you know, obviously protect the fullbacks as well. Obviously, we're going to have to just put, it's one game. You've got to put all your energy into it. Everything you got, every ounce of energy, most important game you'll play, you know?
Yeah, and that was where I was surprised. And I don't rate Roberto Martinez, and I don't understand how he's constantly linked to jobs, but he was tactically totally wrong the way he set up with that Belgian team, because that Belgian team had enough, even without Hazard and players missing. I understand that they came in with injuries, but they had enough to beat that Italy team. They sat back, they paid them way too much respect, and they allowed themselves to go two down. I don't think this team warrants that kind of respect. The record, everyone's talking about the record. The record is so padded. Until they beat Belgium, who are the number one ranked team, I don't agree with that either. But until they beat them, they didn't have a top 10 win on that record. So it was a padded record from the fact that they didn't qualify for the World Cup last time. No. So they were in the second tier of Nations League, which they were able to easily get through. So they had easy Nations League games while we were playing the likes of Portugal and Holland and others. So it didn't mean that much to me. The 11 clean sheets in a row meant a little bit more, because that's, you know, that's seriously difficult to do, to keep those 11 clean sheets. That was convincing, but the record was very padded.
I mean, they were poor against Austria as well, weren't they? I watched that game. I was down in Nuki watching it on holiday, and I watched the game, and they were very poor in that game.
They're six inches from not even being in this final, because that VAR decision went for them, and I don't think they were getting back into that game. They looked so poor. They just didn't. They couldn't look like they could break that team down. But
if that Italy turns up, then we should smash him. And I hope we do.
Well, that game was at Wembley, so maybe they have an issue with. I'm trying to clutch at straws, but maybe they have an issue with the with the ground. Their worst performance was at Wembley, so that might be something. Any social media or anything you want to give out, or just happy to come along and have a chat?
No, happy just to catch up and put my opinion across, and come on, England, let's have it. Let's do the business, and have a good summer. Bring some happiness to everyone. We'd be buzzing. the next few months before the wet weather comes in. So
yeah, before the Premier League starts, which I think is going to be real interesting between four teams for sure. I think Tottenham and Arsenal have dropped out now. I think there's a real big four with Chelsea, United, Man City and Liverpool next season.
Yeah, no, definitely, yeah. No, it'd be interesting to see Watford and who else has come up from the Championship this season, Norwich, and see how those boys get on. They've made a few quite good signs, haven't they? Billy Gilmore, that's a good little on-loan move for Norwich. Did some good business there, didn't they? Got rid of Bundwaya for 35 million, whatever it was. Hell of a transfer. And then chucked in Billy Gilmore probably offers you more. So, but no, should be good. Looking forward to the new Premier League season. And obviously the Bees as well. See if Ivan Toney is Premier League quality. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, we'll get you back on when we're previewing the Premier League, when we're doing a future show, which is where we look at how the season will play out overall. We do a weekly show on the Premier League, but we'll look at the futures, especially the relegation side of things, and when we talk about Chelsea as well. Thanks for coming on, mate. Cheers for that.
That's all right, Bill. Cheers, buddy.
No worries, mate.
All the best. Cheers, mate. Bye.
Well, there you go. We've had plenty of opinions there for the Euro 2020 final. I like Terry's confidence. I'm not as confident about it. I still do think that it will end up being a cagey game. I do think we'll end up paying Italy a lot more respect. I don't necessarily think that we will press them high up the pitch and try and suffocate them in their own half. I do think that we will allow Italy to have a little bit more possession than they're entitled to. But I am still confident that we will end up seeing it through. Don't really like England on a penalty shootout. I do want us to kind of score the goal late into the second half, possibly at the beginning of extra time like we did in the Denmark game. But either way, it's going to be cagey. England-Italy games historically are never, ever decided by more than one goal, and I don't think this one's going to be any different. So I'm going to stick with the under. I like the under 2.5 goals here. I like the under 2.5 goals in the Copa America. And that doesn't necessarily make it sound like they're going to be exciting finals, but the games between England and Denmark and the games against Spain and Italy, both the semi-finals in this competition, were very, very exciting games, and so was the Copa America semi-final between Argentina and Colombia. So you don't necessarily need a plethora of goals to have a really, really good game. And also, especially if you're betting on unders, you don't really want to see too many goals, and you don't even really want to see an interesting game either. But that concludes your Euro 2020 and Copa America final preview here on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Good luck with all your bets as always, and thanks for listening.